Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome on this fine Monday in September. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Good to be here. It's a beautiful, almost fall day here in Mississippi.
Almost fall.
Six days away from fall. But who's counting?
It's 6 days. That's right. The 21st?
21st, 22nd, somewhere in there.
Yeah. So then when winter gets here, it'll feel like summer in Canada.
That's an insult.
You take that back, sir.
No, that, you're about right.
That other voice you heard, Walker Wildman, assistant to the president. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Now, I'm not going to do you like your dad always does you, you know, and just gives you a hard time. How about letting our listeners know if they, for some strange reason, wanted to actually see what we look like and watch us on video? How could they do that?
Yeah, they can do that a couple different ways. First off, you can watch us on Facebook. Visit our Today's Issues Facebook page. Also, you can watch the show on YouTube. I'll be posting all the news stories on our Facebook page. As far as the hurricane goes, or the tropical storm now, that we only have two stations off the air in North Carolina, Beaufort and Jacksonville, North Carolina, which those are right in the path of the storm and the flooding and the rain. So it could, I know there's a lot of other problems going on. You have people losing their homes, you have fatalities. But as far as AFR goes, we've only lost two stations, and that's just for power outages.
Okay. So, all right. And that power outage, yeah. Who knows how long it'll be before that gets on. Fred, why don't we lead off talking about the aftermath, which is still brutal for a lot of people of this hurricane.
Yeah. One of the worst hit communities because of Florence is Wilmington, North Carolina. And as of this morning, it's cut off from the rest of North Carolina by the floodwaters. It's a community of about 120,000 people. A lot of the early reports that you saw this weekend were from Wilmington, and there was a projection that that particular community would be hard hit, and that is the case. What's going to be happening today, if it isn't underway already, they're going to be airlifting food and water into that city because they are completely cut off still by the floodwaters there. Military people are going to get involved with that, disaster relief teams are getting ready. We have a report this morning from our reporter, Bill Bumpus, who had a lot of experience with flooding because he lives in the Houston, Texas area from Harvey last year. But he has been in contact with some of these disaster relief teams, and they were pretty quick to set up staging areas. So they'll be moving in to help out with people. So far, 17 people have lost their lives. And flooding seems to be the major issue. There are about 500,000 people without power this morning. Certainly the winds, it was a strange thing when we talked about this storm coming all last week. It was at a Cat 4 stage, and when it came ashore, it was around Cat 1, and almost people were saying, well, that's a relief. Well, no, Cat 1 is still pretty strong. And so there was certainly wind damage, but as predicted, and the forecasters are getting pretty accurate with they kept calling it a rainstorm, and that's exactly it.
Well, and Wilmington, now my understanding is that they had, just in the last 12 hours, 16 inches of rain, a total of 26 inches through the duration of the storm. You know, a lot of people, you don't think about these kind of things till you get vast amounts of rain in a short amount of time, but a lot of this has to do with the terrain.
Yes.
Because in Houston, for example, fairly flat, and a lot of it just sits, especially if a storm continues to linger in an area. Then you have other areas that have rivers that you may get initial flooding from the actual rainwater from the storm. Then upstream, you have more rain, and it is flowing. So there are always these kinds of aspects to a storm that can make it worse or make it better. It towns that are sitting next to each other, can have a different experience. So 17 fatalities so far. Some of these now have to do with, was paying attention over the weekend somewhat, fires, for example, and those kinds of things that are as a result of people responding to the storm, maybe mm-hmm. with candles and those kinds of things. So, but it's the direct cause is Florence. I mean, what's the name of the storm?
Yeah, Florence.
Florence. Okay. Florence. All right.
Yeah. And so there's still in need of our prayers for a lot of these folks because it's a long way out of the woods yet. But it's encouraging to see both the federal government, state governments, and these organizations like 8 Days of Hope,
right.
which we're very familiar with here at American Family Radio, the Samaritan's Purse, Southern Baptist, and other organizations getting ready to move in. They have these mobile kitchens so that they can come in and they can feed people. It's interesting. I think this is in Wilmington. I think there was one grocery store open, but they're limiting to how much a person can take
right.
From the store. And I think there was a Waffle House, and you're limited to, I think, a biscuit and a coffee each. And it was like $2 each or something like that, because they want to make sure as many people as possible can get food. And that's a big issue, is trying to get food now. You know, I know there was criticism. You know, there were warnings and warnings and warnings leading up to this, get out of town, get out of town. There were some people didn't have anywhere to go.
Right, you know, and if you don't have money to stay at a hotel for right. 4 or 5 nights,
yes,
your option is, well, what are we going to do? We're going to sleep in our car.
Yeah. And so, but you know, the first responders were absolutely incredible. They understand this. There are some people have nowhere to go. And so those people, some of them ended up on the roofs of their houses in their attics, and the rescue teams did get out. And so we saw scene after scene after scene. What's it called? The Louisiana?
Cajun Navy.
Cajun Navy.
Yeah.
They are a big part of this also. Just a terrific group. Heard of them for the first time, I think, was it Harvey?
Yes.
At least came to my attention. Mm-hmm. And these guys are absolutely incredible what they do. And so they're involved with all of this. So now we do have to talk about some of the negatives of all of this. I saw on the weekend looters. It's just absolutely right. disgusting
right.
that these individuals. But the authorities are in pursuit of these individuals. A lot of them were caught on, you know, people have cell phones still that still yeah. work and caught on camera and that sort
Good.
Of thing. So they're looking for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, part of this is social media. It's a whole different world now that mm-hmm. we live in. One of the good aspects is the fact that, like 8 Days of Hope, for example, people can go online or they may get, an alert or something from 8 Days of Hope, and you get hundreds and even thousands of people who say, yeah, we're going to go to North Carolina to help.
Yeah.
I think 8 Days of Hope was also in Houston recently. So social media helps get those things arranged fairly quickly, but then you also have the added aspect of, oh, you're looting the store. I know the guy who owns it, you know, and I'm going to videotape you coming out with a TV. Mm. I might feel a little differently. I mean, I'm against looting, don't get me wrong, but if someone's getting some cans of soup, that's different than coming out with a TV.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And the one of the videos I saw before the storm hit, like the day before, maybe Thursday or Friday, is Walmart, chaos in Walmart. Mm-hmm. People were going in trying to get water, you know, food, things like that. And you just don't realize how chaotic things can be until you put people's livelihoods on the line or their lives on the line, because these people were like animals in there fighting each other, throwing, right. you know, pushing each other out of the way to get a case of water. And, you know, it just makes it kind of, it's kind of scary to see how people react when it comes to a tragedy or chaos like that.
Yeah.
It's what's strange is you'll have the Cajun Navy, you'll have people rescuing someone off the roof of a house, putting their own lives in danger to rescue someone. Then you see those scenes, Walker. You see people fighting over a case of water, and you see the kind of the animalistic side, the base side of human nature as well. So you're going to get everything from one end of the spectrum to another. So,
But we have to remind people, Florence is not finished yet. It has... kudos to the forecasters and the models that they have today. It's making the predicted swing to the north and eventually to the northeast. So In the crosshairs now, West Virginia, possibly Virginia, up into Ohio, in those areas. So the winds have dissipated, I think, 30 miles per hour tops right now, but the rain is still there.
I'm predicting more flooding
more
as
flooding
a result.
In those areas. So just because this is going to move off the mainstream television now to a certain extent. You're not going to see it like you saw it during the weekend, but folks in West Virginia, as I say, up into Ohio are still going to get the effects of this over the next 3 to 4 days.
All right. So, folks, continue to pray for those who are suffering. And if you can, either contribute to 8 Days of Hope or Samaritan's Purse or some of these other groups that will be ministering in the name of Jesus to those who are suffering, or if you can take a few days off and a week off or something like that and go with 8 Days of Hope, they will have a team, I'm sure, going up to North Carolina here before not too long. So, you can find out more at their website. All right, Fred.
On to Washington, D.C. You know, I think it was about a week or so ago, or maybe even 10 days, we all saw on TV day by day the coverage of President Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. And the assessment was that he had done a really good job of handling himself with questions, accusations coming from the Democrats like Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and others. And it looked like it was probably going to be an easy vote. But then Thursday came last week, and we had this strange announcement from Senator Dianne Feinstein of California that sometime in July she had received notice that an accusation was being made by a woman against Kavanaugh when he was in high school, an incident in high school. And Senator Feinstein wouldn't name the individual. Basically, that she said the individual wanted to stay quiet about it. And for the most part, people said, well, you know, you've known this for 2 months. No credibility there. So things were moving forward. But then over the weekend, this person who is making this accusation against Kavanaugh, her name is Christine Blasey Ford. And basically, through her lawyer is Deborah Katz, she's identified herself now. She has told her story. Her allegation is, when she was in high school, when Kavanaugh was in high school, there was an incident at a party. She alleges that Kavanaugh was drinking and some of their friends, and that Kavanaugh had her pressed down on a bed. And so that is the allegation.
Well, now, and that Kavanaugh was trying to remove her clothing.
Yes.
Put his hand over her mouth to prevent her from screaming. There was another young man, friend of... This is the allegation now.
This is the allegation.
That Brett Kavanaugh had a friend, Mark Judge. Mm-hmm. They were in the room together, turned up the music so that she couldn't be heard screaming, and that they were the two young men were falling down drunk, I think.
That's
is
right.
Her.
That is the allegation.
That's right.
Now, Judge Kavanaugh has issued a statement this morning. Now, over the weekend, he denied the allegation, but this is the statement just made in the last few minutes, and I want to read it in full from Judge Kavanaugh. Quote, "This is a completely false allegation. I have never done anything like what the accuser describes to her or to anyone. Because this never happened, I had no idea who was making this accusation until she identified herself yesterday," referring to Sunday. "I am willing to talk to the Senate Judiciary Committee in any way the committee deems appropriate to refute this false allegation from 36 years ago and defend my integrity," end quote. So the one thing we know for sure this morning, someone is lying. There's no middle ground here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, the only other thing I could suggest as a possible explanation, we kind of talked about this a little bit before the show, you know, is if this, either the woman's lying, Brett Kavanaugh's lying, and his friend Mark Judge is lying. Perhaps the woman is not mentally well, but all indications are, and I think she's a professor and those kind of things. She's a Democratic activist. So I don't think that there's, I don't think that she's delusional. So somebody is lying here. Now here's my take, and then let's open this up a little bit and discuss, because everyone's going to be talking about this today. Mm-hmm. This kind of tactic, which, you know, Dianne Feinstein had this letter. She had a conversation, as did other senators, with Brett Kavanaugh. I don't know if it was face-to-face or over the phone, but she had an opportunity to talk to him privately. Never brought any of this up. So just as it appears that Brett Kavanaugh is going to have smooth sailing pretty much and become confirmed, now this comes out. So here's my take on this. I think that we ought to take allegations of sexual assault very seriously. When a woman says she's assaulted, police are supposed to by this day and time, but they should always make sure that they take those kinds of accusations as credible. They should investigate. They shouldn't dismiss them. Women should not be embarrassed or shamed to come forward. And however, if a woman decides she does not want to go through all that with the police and she would rather not file a report or any of those kind of things, that is her choice. But 40 years from now, she can't bring it up. Okay, so that's the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. 36 years ago, she made the choice not to file a police report and charge the individual, whether it's Brett Kavanaugh or somebody else. She made that choice. That's her choice. But 40 years later, you can't say, well, I didn't feel strongly enough to file a police report back then, but now I'm going to accuse somebody, and there's not going to be a thing he can do to prove his innocence. I don't go for that.
Yeah, I'm getting more and more cynical the more and more the left uses this, because this is not, you know, the media covers these stories as if this is a new tactic, you know, as if this is a new thing or as if it's not political. But how many times have we seen this? I mean, we saw this with Judge Roy Moore 6 months ago. We saw this with Herman Cain back in 08, I think, or maybe 2012. Then we saw this with, we've seen it.
Clarence Thomas.
With Clarence Thomas. I mean, they tried a similar tactic with Jim Jordan a few months ago as far as him being complicit in sexual misconduct at Ohio State. So this tactic is used over and over and over again, and every time the accusation cannot be proven or disproven beyond the shadow of a doubt. There's never a police report. Never a police report. There's never a DNA test. There's never a hospital receipt from going to get a medical examination after your supposed assault or rape. So all that being said, I can't believe her because I don't know. No one knows, and if you can't prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, then you shouldn't come forth. If you can't prove, you don't have seven witnesses who were all in the room and they've all they've all sworn and pledged under oath that this happened, you don't have a police report, then I'm sorry.
And to be fair, sometimes sexual assault happens in private where there are no witnesses. But all I'm saying is at that point, a woman should go to the police, file a report, and if she chooses not to, that is her choice too. But I don't want to hear 40 years from now when nobody can prove anything one way or the other that this happened. And it's not as if these things are never lies. We were talking about before the show the Duke Lacrosse accusation, Tawana Brawley's accusation years ago in New York City made Al Sharpton famous. Mm-hmm. And she admitted to lying, just like the woman did on the Duke Lacrosse case. Sometimes these things are lies. And all we've got to go on 36 years later is I don't know who's telling the truth. And that is not a fair tactic when you're considering someone. So please, folks, please understand, sexual assault and accusations of sexual assault are very serious. They should be taken seriously. Whatever a woman decides to do, she should be supported at that time. File a report. Don't file a report.
But if you don't report it.
But if you don't, you can't be given credence 40 years later.
Right.
Kellyanne Conway, of course, very well known now, White House spokesperson, was on Fox and Friends this morning. She was asked how She and the White House are responding to this. Cut one.
Well, this woman should not be insulted and she should not be ignored. So let me make very clear. I've spoken with the president. I've spoken with Senator Graham and others. This woman will be heard. She's going to, I think the Senate Judiciary Committee will decide how and through which forum. Now, let's make very clear. Those Democratic senators had no interest in the mountain of evidence about Judge Kavanaugh's character integrity. One female senator spent most of the time talking instead of asking him questions. Another female senator lied about his characterization of a legal case and abortifacients. And we all know that Cory Booker restrained himself, I guess, with humility. He didn't call himself Jesus, but referred to himself as Spartacus. Also, there are private phone calls that happen with judicial candidates. And that happened with Judge Kavanaugh as well. That would have been the time for Senator Feinstein to have posed to him a sensitive matter mm-hmm. such as this.
Yeah, and to that point, and you guys have kind of summarized this, and Kellyanne Conway kind of alluding to this, the timing of this, and the fact that Feinstein, and I think Dick Durbin knew about this as well, because he spoke to this last Thursday as well, they knew this for weeks.
About this woman's accusation.
About this woman's accusations. And at the very last moment, last Thursday, they say, oh, by the way.
Yeah, they waited, because this is so difficult to prove, they waited to see if they could derail Kavanaugh's confirmation through other means. And then when it became clear they couldn't, they threw their last card on the table, which means to me they don't care about Christine Blasey Ford. Mm. They only care about keeping Kavanaugh off the bench.
Yeah, and it's all about timing, because if the best time to have brought forth this revelation, if they think it's legit, would have been during the hearings, is to enter it in the record and ask Judge Kavanaugh under oath, did this happen?
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that would have sunk his... That would have sunk Kavanaugh right then, unless he could refute it beyond a shadow of a doubt. But they waited, because here's what's going to happen. If the Republicans cave and they let her come testify, who knows when, then we got to do that for a week. Then we got to push back the committee vote on Kavanaugh a week. Then we push back the floor vote. And guess what? Before you know it, we're going to wait till after January to approve of Kavanaugh, or... better yet, we may have to go through the whole hearing process all over again on Brett Kavanaugh, or better yet, we may just need to get a new nominee by President
Trump. And here's the strategy on the part of Democrats, because in my opinion, this is all politics. This is all about politics. And the strategy here on the part of Democrats is, we do not want the handful of Democratic senators who are up for election in November in states that President Trump won, we don't want them on the hot seat having to vote for or against Brett Kavanaugh. So we want to push the confirmation vote past the election.
Yep.
And then we can start voting against everyone Trump sends up and make sure that he gets nobody else added to the Supreme Court. That is all this is about. These Democrats, if they cared about this woman, they would have brought this up from the get-go, but they don't. And she's an instrument.
I wonder, can you put a judge on the court after the court's term has began?
I was just thinking about that, because the next term for the October 1st, which is another part of the strategy. If they can delay it by then, then I don't think Kavanaugh can come in.
Until next term.
Because they start hearing cases. And that's
he can't come in on a case they've already heard.
Yes.
He can be confirmed, but he has to. He will only hear cases that for which he is seated.
Yes.
So, all right, folks. Look, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we have more things to discuss, and some stuff that involves the evangelical church that are increasingly shocking. And anyway, we'll take a short break. When we come back, more of today's issues.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Miki Addison of Airing the Addisons on Urban Family Talk.
Praise God that the Word of God is living and active, right? And praise God that it doesn't matter how many times you have read a book or a chapter or a verse, the Holy Spirit just really keeps that verse active in your life.
We'll also get an up-close view on the latest in the news. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Well, the last 2 years, we've just had tremendous response, early response to the announcement that we're going to Israel on a Holy Land tour. We're going March of this year. We go March of every year. Last year, we filled up like early fall, and I expect us to fill up early fall this year as well. So if you're interested in this March 14th through the 22nd tour, and you'll be going with primarily supporters of AFA and AFR, just get the brochure and check it out. You can call us today at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll mail you a brochure. If you simply want to go online, all the information is there. It's at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want to go in March, we're filling up, and we're filling up fast, so check it out, twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. When Hurricane Florence threatened the Carolina coastline, many residents took off for higher ground, including nearly 100 senior citizens from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, all residents of a retirement home ordered to leave town. Their caravan included buses and a U-Haul truck filled with medications and wheelchairs and walkers. They wound up at a hotel in Fairburn, Georgia, a place well known for its Southern hospitality. When the seniors arrived at the local hotel, they were greeted with a letter from the town's police department. The officers offered a free shuttle service to take folks to the grocery store or the pharmacy or church or wherever they might need to go, a helping hand to the senior saints. The folks who run the senior living home have been overwhelmed by the tender mercies of the townsfolk. Fairburn, Georgia, a safe harbor in the storm. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman. All right, Fred, let's kind of tie this up here on the Kavanaugh nomination, which appears to be in some trouble. Where do we go from here in terms of what happens now?
Well, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which held those hearings with Kavanaugh in the last couple of weeks, Senator Chuck Grassley, has indicated that he has tried to reach out to this woman and to give her an opportunity. So it looks like there could be a hearing of some type where she gets to testify before these senators. Now, there are at least two Republican members of that Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, who is not running again, and also Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, have both indicated they want to hear more from Ms. Ford. But also, not on the committee, but Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee said the vote should be postponed until the committee hears from Ms. Ford. So, not surprised by Ford and Flake. They are enemies of President Trump. They don't like this man, similar to what John McCain did with the Obamacare
vote. Talking about Corker and Flake?
Corker and Flake. Lindsey Graham, I don't know what his motivation is, but anyway, there is enough doubt amongst those Republicans. The media also reached out to Senator Susan Collins of Maine, a Republican. She wavered at the moment. But you do have some division building within the Republican camp with regards to what should we do with this.
And the committee is 21-20, is that it?
Yes.
Republicans and Democrats. Yes. So if you lose a single Republican on that committee, okay, now you're talking deadlocked.
I think it's 11 to 10. There's
11 20, to 10?
21 yeah. total
21,
members.
Okay, good. 11 yes.
to 10.
Yeah. All right.
Now, another aspect of this we didn't get to talk to, but Sandy Rios mentioned this on our program this morning. Judge Kavanaugh's mom was a judge.
Right.
And she heard a case involving Ms. Ford's parents back many years ago. I think it was a foreclosure.
It was.
On their property. She was the judge. Judge Kavanaugh's mom was a judge who heard that case.
And
ruled against.
And ruled against the accuser's parents
yes.
in a foreclosure
yes.
hearing.
So that has to come out there. It's all now. You know,
she's an anti-Trumper. She's a very big Democrat
mm-hmm.
supporter.
Mm-hmm.
Now that doesn't mean necessarily that her accusation's false.
No,
it's just in the mix of all
yeah.
this.
Yes,
are all these other details that should be taken into account. But we talked about during one of our meetings this morning, Walker. Your opinion is, and I don't argue this at all, really, that if Christine Blasey Ford does get a hearing before this committee,
mm-hmm.
you think that Kavanaugh's finished?
I think so. I think, yeah, I agree. Yeah, if she gets before the committee and her story, whether it be true or not, sounds true, then, and she's under oath, I think that I don't see how Republicans could vote for Kavanaugh after having her come and tell her story, her alleged story before them under oath. If Flake and Corker are kind of waffling now, they would definitely not do it then. But I don't think, here's what I think they might try. Chuck Grassley, the chairman, might try to bring her in a closed door hearing. I don't think that's fair. I think if you're gonna bring down someone like Kavanaugh, and you believe your story, you should be able to do it under oath on live television.
Where people can hear
your story yes. for firsthand.
And I also think it's only fair that you bring Brett Kavanaugh back.
Yes.
To answer the charges. This is face your accuser kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if she is at all credible and doesn't, now she should be, here's another thing. I'm not sure how tough Republicans will be in questioning her. They're not going to act like a prosecuting attorney or a defense attorney, you know, cross-examining a witness, because that's their job. They get paid to do that. Members of the Senate, you know what they get paid to do? Get reelected.
Mm-hmm.
That's in their minds. They're not going to be overly harsh with her or overly tough with her. So they may lob some questions, but Kavanaugh's got to come back. And if she's not telling the truth, he's got to deconstruct what she said,
mm-hmm.
be given opportunity to. Well, I mean, what if he comes back and says, the weekend that she's saying, you know, I wasn't even in town. I mean, those are the kind of things he has to
yep.
be allowed to. But now she doesn't even remember where the party was, what house it was, who else necessarily was there.
Right.
I doubt she knows what weekend it is. How in the world Brett Kavanaugh is going to defend himself
mm-mm.
is beyond me. So anyway, we're just going to have to wait and see how this all plays out. So, all right, folks, you're going to be hearing a lot about Brett Kavanaugh again this week because of these accusations from Christine Blasey Ford. You'll be hearing a lot about her name as well, and we'll be covering it. Check out One News Now. American Family News will be covering this as well. All right, Walker, who do we have
yeah.
up next?
Yeah, we're going to change subjects a little bit, and we're going to go out to Texas and talk to Lynn Ingram of Redeem Clean. Lynn, welcome to today's issues.
Good morning, Walker. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, brother.
Good to have you with us. Folks probably recognize your voice. We have you. Try to have you on once a week, maybe every other week, to talk about the Redeem Clean laundry detergent products and how folks can get them and why they should honestly get them, because it supports American Family Radio. But here's a question for those maybe wondering. Are the Redeem Clean products HE compatible, Lynn?
Absolutely, Walker. Thanks for asking that. We've had that question asked a number of times. You know, high efficiency, I mean, HE stands for high efficiency. And basically what that means in the new technology of laundry is that they're trying to use less water, less energy, less electricity, and all these others. Well, to do that, you're your detergents and all your chemicals need to be activated with less water. And so, again, it goes back to the very first time we ever did, we talked about this, Walker, is that we always add the detergent first, whether you use liquid, whether you use powder, whether you use free and clear. All these products are HE compatible. And it just means that as your tub is filling with water and you put your clothes in, it's got a little bit, few more minutes for it to activate and make your detergent dissolve it so that it will work effectively once your clothes are in. But you always add it first. It just takes, if you put your, that's one of the things my daughter asked one time is that why do we have that a little oily smell or sticky smell or something on the top of my clothes on her eye efficiency machine? Well, it's because they didn't add the detergent first, or they put too many clothes in there to adequately flush off all the dirt and the grunge and the grime and the excess detergent, Walker.
All right. Hey, Lynn, yes. And by the way, that makes me feel so much better for all the times that I do the laundry at our house, which now that I think of it is never. I never do the laundry. I really am bad at it. Maybe my wife thinks I do that. I'm bad at it on purpose. So, hey, listen, before we let you go, Lynn, please explain to our people why we have you on once a week and how this product briefly came into being and why you created it.
Ed, thank you for that. It's an opportunity for us to share what we believe, to take a stand for Jesus Christ. You know, we're active in our church, you know, with giving and tithing and other things. But your ministry with almost 200 radio stations, I just felt compelled to help support you guys. And we developed this within the business a long time. My partner, Jim Duncan, is in Austin, you know, combined over 90 years of in the laundry business. And we just felt like we knew more about this business than anything else, that we could bring to the market a product that was developed solely for AFA and AFR, for their listeners to use. They're washing clothes anyway. Why can't we just get people to support y'all's ministry in whatever capacity that you felt like you need to use these funds? But we developed this for y'all, for AFA and AFR, and it's just been awesome the way that it's developed. There's just it's Jim and I and our families have been so blessed by getting to work with you guys, and we know y'all that AFA and AFR is the real deal. There's no fluff, there's no float. It's the real deal, and we're committed and confident and confirmed every day that we have done the right thing. And thank you for allowing us to do this.
Well, thank you, Lynn. You and Jim both, thank you so much. And we appreciate you coming on, helping those of us who do laundry to do it a little bit better and to help American Family Association and American Family Radio. Thank you, Lynn.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bye, Ed. Have a good one.
All right, folks, if you want to check out the product from Redeem Clean, go to afastore.net, afastore.net. All right, Fred. We want to spend a few minutes now talking about Matt Chandler. Now, Matt Chandler's fairly well-known pastor in the evangelical community. He's a lead pastor, lead teaching pastor, whatever the title is there, at the Village Church. That's a Southern Baptist church in Flower Mound, Texas. He's also the president of the Acts 29 Network, which has to do with church planning and Acts. There's 28 chapters in the book of Acts. Acts 29 means the work of the church continues. Now, I know some about Matt Chandler. I know he's very well respected, especially amongst younger folks, millennials. But he is one of those increasingly, I want to say leftist. I want to be fair here, but I'm not sure exactly all of Matt Chandler's positions on products. But the Russell Moore crowd within evangelicalism, which doesn't like us, okay, because we take our stands on abortion and same-sex marriage. I think Matt Chandler is definitely against abortion, but he was interviewed by Vice News. Now, that I think they air documentaries and interviews on HBO, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of give us a little bit of a lead in here what we're going to be talking about. And then let's listen to some of the things that Matt Chandler says in this interview. And I want us to discuss it because this increasingly is going to be the divide in the evangelical church. The traditionalists, like ourselves, who point to clear biblical principles about things like life, the sanctity of marriage, human sexuality, and those who may or may not agree with those positions, but who prefer to emphasize other things that we look at as liberal political opinions. Help us out here, and let's delve into some of the things that Matt Chandler said on this interview.
Yeah, and to your point in introducing this, the 2016 election, I think, really brought a divide within the evangelical community into public attention. There was an element of the evangelical community, certainly Russell Moore and others, very critical of evangelicals who supported Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. And they made that known. They were very public with that. And there were accusations like you're trusting more in politics than in God, and it had to do with Donald Trump's character, et cetera,
right,
et cetera. And so out of that has come also in recent weeks, kind of opening this up, this divide a little bit more, were comments that came from Dr. John MacArthur against his kids. He raised concerns, became very public about it, about social activism.
The social justice movement.
The social justice movement, and what he's critical of, John MacArthur, has been as including the social justice movement as part of the gospel. And John MacArthur says, no, it's not right, part of the gospel. The gospel is Jesus Christ coming to die on Calvary's cross for our sins. That is the gospel.
Right.
And so there's this divide. It's been boiling. And now you have this short documentary that's coming out from this group, Vice. Matt Chandler plays a role. I'm not sure how big a role. But they're doing this documentary. The documentary is called What is the Future of Evangelicals? And Vice released a portion of this documentary last week, and it's getting some attention. And it's getting attention because Matt Chandler is within the camp, the Gospel Coalition is another group with Russell Moore. Tim Keller is part of all of this. And
is J.D. Greer, now is he a part of the Gospel Coalition? He's the new president of
the new Southern president Baptist Southern Convention. Baptist Convention. And, of course, we know the huge kerfuffle last in the convention in June of this year, where Paige Patterson basically was fired as a seminary president. And that was celebrated by some of these Gospel Coalition people. All right, so Matt Chandler is part of this new documentary from Vice. And he has asked questions about the future of evangelicalism, what's going to happen. And in one particular cut that got my attention, certainly, and Janet Medford was dealing with this last week, Matt Chandler called former President Barack Obama a great man. Boy. And so you're going to hear that comment, but also his belief in why evangelicals supported Donald Trump. So let's hear cut number five.
The Obama presidency, great man, some of his policies and some of the ways he rolled out his policies really, really scared evangelicals.
Yeah.
And without any kind of real help from pastors and ministers to help their people understand, the news media just whipped us into a frenzy.
Yeah.
and made people feel desperate.
How do you think the evangelical community will be different in 10 years versus 10 years ago?
Golly. Well, firstly, just the whole concept of what evangelicalism is difficult right
Very
now.
Very confusing.
It is such a junk drawer. For some people, evangelicalism now is like a political party, divorced from its, you know, theological roots. There are going to be those that try to reach the world by becoming like the world. And then there are going to be those that try to, by the grace of God, hold fast to Orthodox Christian faith in a way that's compassionate and kind, and they're going to have to weather the backlash of all the wrong that's been done in the name of Jesus the last 50 years.
There's a lot there.
Yeah.
Let's
By the way, in case people did not hear it, the first thing he said was, President Obama, a great man.
A great man.
Yeah, okay.
That was the first thing. But also what I was hearing in his comments as to why so many evangelicals supported Donald Trump. They were afraid. All right. He makes that accusation. And then he says, pastors didn't do a good job of explaining the issues. Therefore, these evangelicals made a mistake. Pastors didn't explain the issues properly to these individuals. And so it was out of a case of irrational fear.
Right.
That seems to be the accusation that Pastor Chandler is making, that evangelicals agreed to support Donald Trump. That's the first aspect of it.
Walker, this is something we've been hearing over and over and over again. I just call them the Russell Moore crowd, because while I do have respect for Bible teachers like Tim Keller and some of these others, J.D. Greer, I'm learning some things about, so I've held off, you know, any kind of opinion. I don't know that much about Matt Chandler. I'm sure we would probably agree on 95% of, you know, things theologically.
Right.
But Russell Moore, I don't want to go
after this.
He started this.
Yeah.
I have zero respect for that man. We have invited him. We have offered to go and see him
in
personally.
Nashville.
He's criticized talk radio when he was coming through Mississippi. He's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
I know who he was talking about. We offered on our own dime to go and meet with him. He wouldn't even answer. He wouldn't
right.
even answer us. So I have zero respect for him until he does things like a Christian should, and we have a conversation, okay? Some of these others, though, I kind of see them in the kind of the same camp. This idea that Christians who voted for Donald Trump, your dad has said, and
right.
I'm certainly in the same camp, he wasn't my first pick.
Right.
Okay? But the Christians who voted for Donald Trump were irrational, they were motivated by fear, or they were ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems to be what Matt Chandler is saying. It certainly is what people like Russell Moore
right.
have been saying. Do you think we're irrational and ignorant and full of fear?
There's two things that I take from this that I have issue with Matt Chandler about. The first thing is the fact that if you're a Bible believing Christian and you marked a check mark by Donald Trump's, or you filled in the bubble on your ballot for Donald J. Trump in November of 2016, that somehow makes you an illegitimate or a non-Christian, or even you're just a Christian, but you're not having a good witness. I don't buy that premise, because every time we do a check mark by someone on a ballot, I don't think that means we fully endorse every decision that person's made over
right.
their 50, 60 odd years of life. So that's the first issue. I don't agree that Christians were immoral for voting for Donald Trump. The second thing is that this is a one-way street, and that's why I have problem even listening to people like Matt Chandler, is because it's not as if they're saying we have immoral people on the ballot on the Democrat side and the Republican side. We just need more moral people on the ballot. But that's not what he's saying, because he thinks Barack Obama's a great person.
Yeah.
And so basically what he's saying is it's okay to vote for Barack Obama. It would have been okay to vote for Barack Obama, but not Donald Trump. But even though Barack Obama supported killing babies, giving $500 million a year to Planned Parenthood, he's for sodomy-based marriage, but we should still vote for him.
Because he's a great man.
Because he's a great man. And so we've really taken, it's really personality versus policy. Barack Obama has a better personality, so you should vote for him. But his policies are absolutely horrible. Donald Trump has a horrible personality, but his policies are absolutely great, but you should vote against him. And
right.
so it's really personality politics has taken over, and that's what Matt Chandler is basing all of his decisions on.
Now, I don't know if we'll ever get any clarification, Fred, on what he meant by the mistakes that we've made over the last 50 years. I'm not sure what he meant by that. Well, we'll have to wait for the documentary to find out and see if he elaborated. But my opinion is he's going to be after Christians who have voted Republican because Republican policies reflected their beliefs about Scripture. I think that's what these guys are saying. Now, Russell Moore, again, I don't want to mean this about Russell Moore. Russell Moore criticizes Christians who have voted Republican, although I don't know a single Christian who's voted Republican, considers himself or herself a Republican, who believes the Republican Party is part of the kingdom of God. I don't know anybody like that. But Russell Moore, first thing he tweets about and shows, sends out pictures of himself, was when he, after becoming president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, went to the White House, and there he is smiling with Barack Obama, President Barack Obama. So it's okay for these guys to be linked to the left when it comes to politics, but not the right. So we'll just have to wait and see what Matt Chandler meant. But I have read enough of this group to know, and it's not just these individuals, the Gospel Coalition is full of these people who have just ragged on Christians who voted for Donald Trump since 2016.
Yeah, and one more thing. I don't want to hear this from Matt Chandler in a few months or even next week. Well, Vice News, they highly edited my statements, and they put them out of context because the media is trying to pit me or my side of the aisle against conservative evangelicals because they like to see the divide. I don't want to hear that excuse from Matt Chandler. We haven't heard it yet. But my deal is, if you're going to do an interview, if you won't come on AFR and say things like that, which he would never do that. He might come on and promote his book, but he wouldn't come on and say that. But you want to go on Vice News as if that somehow they're out there to give a fair shake of the evangelical movement? That's
We've turned Vice down on
absolutely.
At least two occasions when they wanted interviews because I don't trust them.
No. And their goal is to spark up some kind of drama, and Matt Chandler just aided in it. I mean, he was taking the bait left and right in that audio.
I think as you described the left of the evangelical movement, I think people like Chandler, Russell Moore, and others in the Gospel Coalition, they believe the evangelical community has failed in the area of what they term as racial reconciliation.
Right.
And even going as far, I think, as sometimes as alluding to, if you supported Trump, then you're a white supremacist. So they're trying to appeal. They believe there's a whole block of people that voted for Barack Obama that probably voted for Hillary Clinton, that they believe they can win that group by sounding more like they do when it comes to racial reconciliation. And also they've really bought into the Chandler Russell Moore group and the Me Too movement.
Right.
This is all part of the plan. In fact, and on top of that, let's stop talking, they believe, about abortion. Let's stop talking about homosexuality. They believe those are issues that divide us from that group over here that whose priority is racial reconciliation and the Me Too movement. I want to play a couple more clips.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
From that documentary that's coming out from this group, Vice. In this one, Chandler talks about homosexuality, and so because we've just addressed that, let's hear what he had to say in that question. It's cut number 7.
What are the challenges today in keeping young people engaged here?
My experience with the de-churched, that's what I would call them, those who grew up in church and have left, is that it's a sense of hypocrisy that they picked up on, a kind of cowardice among the church to address things that are serious and significant pains of our day. So whether that be domestic violence, what the church has been just painfully quiet on, or even things like racial reconciliation, which, man, you step into those spaces, you're going to draw a lot of flack from the evangelical world.
All right. So anyway,
we're out of time.
Janet Medford dealt with this last week. That was particularly a cut about how to engage young people.
Yeah.
And so, but you heard it there. Against false accusations that the church hasn't been concerned about.
I don't know
issues.
Anybody who's been quiet on domestic violence.
No. Mm-hmm. Or who gets on to their pastor because he talked about it.
Yes.
Who does that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, folks, we're going to continue to cover this because I'm just telling you, if you're a Bible-believing Christian, you consider yourself an evangelical, this is the split that is coming to the evangelical community. Are you doing enough on issues of the left, or are you one of those right-wingers? Anyway, we're going to take a 5-minute break. We'll be right back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.